हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then, Chaitanya Upanishad, Nyaya Sutras, page 14. Okay, who's reading? Maybe we'll just read the sutra again. Concerning suffering, dukkha, birth, janma, material activity, prakriti, evil, dosha, and false knowledge, mithyajnana, removal of mithyajnana leads to the removal of dosha. Removal of dosha leads to the removal of prakriti. You know, material activity. The removal of poverty leads to the removal of janma. And the removal of janma leads to the removal of dukkha. This thus resulting in apavarga, liberation. Right? So it means that it comes down, it goes back the other way. Right? Okay. Udriti, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Nyaya, the philosophy compounded by Gotama. Gotama asserts, by studying the different branches of logic, namely pramana, prameya, shamshaya, prayojana, drishtanta, siddhanta, avayava, tarka, nirnaya, vada, jalpa, vitanda, hetu, abhasha. Okay, then you just have to take out the comment. Hetu abhasha. Oh, hetu abhasha becomes hetu abhasha. Chala and Jati Nigraha. One attains the highest. Just a translation. One attains the highest benefit. Nyaya Sutra text 1. What is the great benefit of which Gotama speaks? That I cannot see. Perhaps he means that expert knowledge of logic. Perhaps he means that expert knowledge of logic is a great benefit for the living entities. God is not included among the 16 items, he says, being great benefit. That's why the Vedas affirm. Naisha tarkena matir apaneya. God cannot be understood by material logic. Gotama sees liberation in this way. Okay, this is just the verse. Liberation means attaining the knowledge that frees one from the ignorance that is the birthplace of suffering. Interesting, I put that on again. In general, this sutra may be seen to support the idea that liberation is the cessation of suffering. Spiritual bliss is not pleasant in Gotama's conception of liberation. In his conception, there is no bliss of meeting God. For this reason, Gotama's Nyaya Shastra is opposed to the Vedas. That concludes our description of the Nyaya philosophy. Tattva Viveka, text 17, commentary.
How can it be opposed to the Vedas if their idea is motion?
Because it's not actual. That means the Vedas are describing love of God. Like, see, we have in the Vedic literatures are all there, written by Vyasadeva. Then Vyasadeva then has after the instruction of Narad Muni, he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam as the conclusion of the Vedas. And in the Vedas, and that core of verses that Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. You know, so that relationship with him based on pure devotion, that gives the happiness. That gives, in other words, it takes care of everything that all these other philosophies are talking about. Like that. So when it's seen in that context, then it has a value. But he's pointing out on its own, it doesn't have the value. It won't get you anywhere. It's only when it's connected to Krishna, then it'll have a meaning. Just he's bringing up the liberationist.
Also, the original Vedic standard is the Paravidya. There is only Para and Apara. Paravidya, there is only Vidya and Avidya. The real Vidya is Paravidya and Apara and Avidya, the rest.
So Upanishad says Paravidya and there's Avidya. So Aparavidya. So, in other words, if Aparavidya is used in connection with Paravidya, it's counted as in that context of Para. But if it's not used in that context, it's considered Avidya. So they don't, in that way, Upanishads don't divide it into three. Because their point is it's about Paravidya and what will get you there. Well, the other is about how to engage everybody, connect everybody in the slow path to get there. So you can see as the Upanishads are actually talking about the direct path, about bhakti. Like that. So it's just the pointing out that on its own it's not going to get you. Logic itself can't get you anything. You know, can't bring you closer to Krishna. So the position of it has a value only when it's supporting transcendental knowledge. On its own it can't give you, just like the pots itself can't produce food. It's only in connection with the cook and the cooking process, then the pots and pans and utensils all become valuable. But otherwise, they're just there in the kitchen. They don't do anything. They just take up space, collect dust, like that. You know, unless you have a good, I say, heavy cast iron frying pan, you can hit someone in the head with that. That also, you know, it has a value. But you still, unless you hit someone in the head with it, it still has no importance. Right? So one has to be very clear on that. Otherwise, it's like we were saying before, you know, in the last discussion, then the tendency is, oh, see, because you have transcendental knowledge, the Atmavidya, then that Atmavidya, when it's being explained logically, you know, through the Nyaya, that combination becomes Anvichiki. So when you're logically explaining something, coming to the actual conclusion of the Vedas, that's Anvichiki. Right? So then if you're speculating, that's just an aspect of, it's not the complete package. So then from that, then you would get, okay, so then the logic is important. So then we should get into logic. And so therefore, without logic, we can't understand philosophy right there, thereof. That's the point, is as soon as you acknowledge the aparavidya, if the attention focuses on the secondary, and then the primary becomes a anga, an appendage of the secondary, that's when it's been lost. You know, it'll put you on the slow path, and by doing those pious activities, and now and again, because they can't function without bhakti, so that means now and again you have to do something devotional. You know? So therefore, you will progress slowly, but at the same time, if you get too distracted, then it'll be gone. You know, that's, therefore, samsara means everybody's been going around and around. You know, and so it's to stop that, because otherwise we'll look at it, it's okay. It's like, you know, Prabhu was saying before, is that, you know, they were teaching, you know, because the other religions, you know, all the world religions, the Vaishnavas and this and that, by following them, we can get, you know, come to the platform of love of God. And so therefore, they can do just what they are, and that's it. But in the next sentence after that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, but it doesn't mean we acknowledge things that are wrong. So if they're doing something wrong in their religious practice, that has to be pointed out. It's not that, oh, we can do so, everything's all right. Because we're doing that within the Vedic circle. In the Vedic circle, then we're saying this is not pure devotion. You shouldn't do that. So the same thing goes in any of the other religious processes. So it's the same. So the two have to go together. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out, just like the Vedas say, without it being connected to the primary, it doesn't have any value for devotional service. But once you connect it, then it has value. So, yeah.
Also, in this context, then the definition of vada says that, you know, it is naturally applied in a discourse between guru and disciple. And if there is a fallacy in an opponent, you point it out for the sake of finding out the truth. So Prabhupada's mood
very
is
nice, very nice.
That like you're doing good and then there is a fallacy which will impede your progress towards pure devotion, and he just pointed it out. It's not who is superior, who is inferior.
Yeah.
Then it goes to more of
or who is that we're all equal.
Because
it's a matter of what's useful you use and what's not useful you reject.
Otherwise, he becomes a shallow critic.
Sorry?
Otherwise, he becomes a shallow critic. That's
not yes, the shallow critic, yes. Yeah, which I think is the
skeptic.
The skeptic, which is also then the Vitanda.
Vitanda.
He becomes the Vitandi. He just is arguing just to, you know, yeah, prove the other guy wrong. Not that you have any basis yourself.
Maharaj, can you repeat the Andikshiti's definition? What is Andikshiti?
Anvikshi is the kamas, and there's a specific one where he's breaking down the word.
Anviksha means that which follows. That which follows the knowledge is Anvikshi.
Yeah.
That which follows.
Okay.
Anviksha. That which is already seen, Anvikshi means the truth or the knowledge, the logic follows it. That's why it's Anvikshi.
Yeah, it was it. Nyaya is the this is quoting from the Nyaya is the examination of an object with the help of sources of valid knowledge, pramanas. It was on page 10,
okay,
at the top.
Mm-hmm.
The second,
yes.
third.
Yes.
The inference, anumana, which is not contradicted by perception and scripture, is called anvikshika. Anvikshika anu, that which follows, iksha, knowledge. Right, so in other words, it follows knowledge. Means you have the shastras and you have what's seen. But it's already been established that going by what's seen is not enough. It has to come from shastra. But then you apply it that it's seen. So in other words, if shastra says this, I apply it through anuman. I don't get what's seen. You know, I don't see what the shastra said. You know, it's like discussing with someone about the masculine feminine principle. He's applying it into his family life. But we see as if someone applies it, then the relationship and cooperation between the husband and wife become very good. But he applied it, his marriage fell apart miserably. You know, it means if they're yelling and screaming at each other and throwing plates and cups, that means there's a chance it could work. But this one is, he went out for something, you know, some sankirtan or that. He came back home. That he was just informed, your stuff's not here. Your stuff's over at, you know, your friend's house. And that was it. Went back in the house, closed the door. So that's you know, you can't get worse than that. It means the stuff had already been moved before he came back. So it's already, you know, it's like that. So that's the meaning of, you apply it, but you didn't get the result that it's talking about. That means the application wasn't right. So it wasn't anvikshike, because it wasn't following the knowledge. So in other words, yes, that's what's supposed to happen. I'm doing it. If it's going in that direction, okay, I can see it. So it means that becomes the vijnan. You have the jnan. Vijnan means you apply it, but it didn't happen. You know?
So it's like avidya.
Yes. Like that, yes.
Also, the iksha and literally can mean what is seen or what is to be seen also.
Oh, what is to be seen. Okay, so it's. Okay, go
ahead. Yeah, how, like, basically, what is the right perception of things in that sense?
Okay. Yeah, the right perception, but also what could be seen.
Yeah, what could be.
From hearing from the shastra, by applying that, what you would see is a result.
So if you don't see, that means...
Yeah, something's going wrong. In other words, you say, this is the recipe, and you'll come out with that, you know, they always show that picture that is unobtainable. You know, so if you're cooking, it's not going in that... It's in nice pieces, and you've got a mush. You know something's wrong. Or, you know, or in the picture, it's a mush, but you have chunks. There's something wrong. you know, or in the picture it's white and what you're doing it is black with smoke coming out, you know, this is something wrong.
But
so,
another example with the boy, that his cup was moved. Maybe if he didn't follow the right process, then it would be just thrown up. Otherwise, it would be moved to his friend's house.
There was a consideration.
Dumpster, we got to his friend's house. That's favorable.
Or getting burnt in the backyard,
right? So?
Yeah, but it's still not as good as if they gone around and put the blue or red stickers on everything. Okay. Yeah, okay, some consideration.
So, Maharaj, so Nyaya on its own, we can't really call on Viksha here.
No,
because it doesn't follow. It's just a tool.
Yeah, it's just a tool. That's all. Like the guy whose stuff is put outside.
Yeah. Also, I actually had when Prabhu mentioned that Vada is a discussion between a teacher and the student, and then if there's some fault in the presentation of one or the other, then it should be pointed out. So I always found it difficult with seniors, teachers, or those in the position of the teachers, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. It's either, you know, they get offended and really, you know, give me the sauce, or I just don't have the nerve to do it. I don't know. From the teacher to the pupil is easy. It's kind of the natural flow, but
because that is the natural form.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's the other way. That would be not a natural form, but it may be necessary. But it wouldn't be that.
We'll give the example of Madhvacharya.
Madhvacharya, I thought about it. I knew
the first
somebody.
Class, he sat in front of his guru. His guru is like Achyuta Prakashya. He is not like a Mayavadi, but he studied Mayavad, so that's what he knows. The first class, he says that, you know, he quotes the opening verse and then the commentary by the so-called Mayavad. Offer obeisances to himself because he is Narayan, everyone is Narayan. And Madhvacharya says, okay, that means, like, you know, you and me are same. And what is the use of texts like, you know, Yasya Deva Para Bhakti Yatha Deva Tatha Guru? So all these verses mean nothing. Guru gets up. The first day he contradicts, he gets up, goes, the whole day he doesn't eat. And because he is not eating, the disciple is fasting. Both of them are fasting under the heat. And the next day, morning, Madhvacharya goes and falls the feet of his guru. He says, no, you are the one who was right. I contemplated the whole night. And it happened nicely, but there will be that.
There's other nice examples, but the one that comes up that comes to mind is the discussions in Jiva Dharma when the answers are being given by the Babajis. When they're bringing up about the different things, they will say it in a very nice way, but you know, so it takes purity. It takes that devotion, it takes that realization that you can see everything connected to Krishna, so you can see what's not right. And then they can present it so gently, because that humility they're doing is not like a social thing. That's how they feel. Because otherwise, you do see it, means it's real there, that humility. In your let's say, generally in any aristocratic, level of society, no matter what the culture, there's an understanding that humility and other things is a good thing. And there's certain words and languages that are considered you know, that would be in support of that culture. And so then those individuals that are within it will follow it. But you can understand by the tone of voice how they're saying in the context. Everyone knows that what they're saying is really, really nasty or threatening or, you know, like this. But because he said it with the right words and generally the right tone, you know, to some degree, you know, he's just saying it, you know, that it'll be accepted that he's the gentleman, he's cultured. You know, so just in a cultured way, he just told you you're useless. You know, so you have that, but then what happens is then you get the skeptics who don't have the, and just as a, we call it a caveat beforehand, is that those who point out the faults in that, saying that, oh, that's just superficial, why not be direct and to the point, that they lack piety. So in other words, those people in the aristocratic, they have a piety that these others don't have. That's why they're aristocratic. But it's not pure. So therefore, the underlying material desires are still there, and it's evident, but at least it's presented nicely, so therefore it's culture. But then it's considered it's more honest and straightforward and this and that, to just tell them what you think and like that, and that destroys the whole cultural fabric. And so then you just have all this and that, because otherwise everybody tries to be a little nicer. You know, because then in trying to be nicer, you might also see your own fault and this and that. But if you're just straightforward, you think you're right and they're wrong.
About the gangsters, the American ones and the English?
Yeah. We're saying that someone had done a study on, you know, like you have all the movies and all that of the gangsters. You know, you have the English ones and you have the like that. And they showed the same exact, basically, situation between the two. You know, and one is, you know, the American one is he's yelling and screaming, "We're going to kill you. We're going to, you know, rip out your toenails. We're going to, you know, like that." You know, and then the British one is going so, you know, basically just very constant says, "You know, this is really unfortunate. I mean, you know, is this really going to work out bad for you and, you know, everyone connected to you?" You know, like that. Just one is yelling and screaming, because there's a little bit more culture there. So they would, you know, they dress very nicely and all of that. And when you see also when they get up to the higher realms, even in the American, they dress really well and that. They'll talk better. And if it needs some rougher thing, they'll send the lower guys because they'll yell and scream. But they won't. But the British guys, even there when they're nailing you to the floor, then they're just saying, you know, I told you, don't you know, like this. They're just more cool. So, yeah, it's more culture. You can relate to it more. You can have a nicer conversation as long as you stick to it, because the other one is just immediately aggressive. So you can get somewhere. You could, if you applied it nicely, you could actually possibly uplift the conversation. So it is better. Though the modern thing is, no, the truth is straightforward and this and that. So then why won't we tell them they're a bunch of idiots? You know, they're self-centered. They, you know, they have their own opinion, and they're trying to make it look like it's universal. Isn't that stupid? You know, so the perfection. Then we see, or you have those. But the Vaishnav, we see those great personalities. How they say it is just so nice, because they're actually humble. They think that they're not the important element. They're not the one that's going to correct it, like you're showing the point before. So even though it's based on Dharma, Yudhishthira must be saying, "I'm going to do this," then it was the problem. It started the problem. And then we see in the same pastime, in that greater pastime, then Draupadi, she's thinking, "I will control this." But when she gave up and served to Krishna, then it worked. So there's always that aspect of that. It's we're not the doer. We do our service, we do our duties, but we're not the doer. So that would be where you'd see is that kind of culture is that if you can present it from the humble position that it, you know, it's like this, it appears that this or that, or if you know it like that, you can look and see how they talk, you know, like that. It's just, they're so far out. But otherwise, then in that situation, do you need to be there in those situations? You know what I'm saying? Is it a class that you're going to get a, you know, some kind of acknowledgement for? And if so, then just, you know, stay out of the way, do what they need to do, and get your, you know, piece of paper and leave. If it's a matter you don't need to be, then you can always, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, there's the little boys' room, there's you have a little boys' room? No? Okay. In America, little boys' room is going to the bathroom.
Okay. In little boys' room.
It just means go to the bathroom.
That was a restroom.
Restroom. Yes.
At least 1 hour.
Yeah. The restroom. The ladies would say, "I have to powder my nose."
Yeah.
You know, like that. So that was the thing. You know, the men might say, "I have to wear more." You know, like that. So it's just a gentle way of saying.
Yeah.
So it's always more. It's more poetic, because that's the thing of the Vaishnavas. It's poetic, the straightforward, you know, snarling and this. It's not poetic. It's dogs and cats. It's not. So it's not. It's not ideal. But it doesn't mean you can't be strong and make the point. You know, especially when you have that like, you know. I say the teacher and the student, like Prabhupada will be very strong in the point. But then you see at other points when it's about him, he'll just say, no, like that Sweden thing, you know. He's talking very strongly. Say, okay, well, what class man are you? I'm fifth, servant of the other four. That's it. Nobody said anything more. There was no, that it was dropped. So it's that Vaishnava quality that can be done. And but it's also said, I think it's also in, maybe it's in, it's in Krishna Vajramrita, because I think he talks about stuff like that. That there's the aspect is that if you're in a position to say something, you do. If not, you can go to another. If it's something that needs to be said, you go to another senior devotee, talk about them. If they're in a position to say something. And if there still isn't, then you just leave it. Krishna will take care of it. You know, and when you're giving classes to others, you try to mentioned a little bit more indirectly instead of one thing, then it doesn't get back to them and it doesn't come around and bite you in the backside. Right, so we're saying these things speaking from experience.
Yes.
the biting in the backside, so the thing is saying it nicely, we're still working on that. We haven't quite got there.
Another point I was also thinking about is vidya and avidya. It seems that in the beginning of the movement, it was very strongly divided. It was Krishna and it was Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And then apara vidya wasn't there as much. But then it was introduced a little later. I mean, as the society developed, it was a need. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, what we've noticed also is that the apara vidya being disconnected from vidya became avidya.
Yes.
And actually, you know, devotees going left and right, taking all kind of you know, courses and this and that, but not studying Srila Prabhupada's books, or not even practicing, you know, what they're supposed to practice, and becoming Hindus. And of
that's
course,
on a good day.
Yeah, that's I wanted to clarify that the lower class of, not the top Hindus, but just, you know, so that's a pity.
Yeah. Well, that's why we see is that immediately after it's been made, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making this point. Because if you don't see it in connection with the para vidya, it is avidya. That's it's called apara vidya because it can be encaged in. It's secondary. But if it's not, then it's outside vidya. So it's very dangerous. Because the thing is the Western, due to attachment, they'll get involved in that. But it's not so difficult to point out that it's not necessarily ideal. And so you can kind of see a distinction. But then when you're dealing with the Vedic apara vidya, then it's taken that it's Vedas, so it's Shastra, so therefore it's automatically bhakti. But you have to see it that way. That's the point. It's just explaining the material energy. And the material energy, being separated material energy, separated means you don't see Krishna the person there. That's what it means. It's all me, but I'm not in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not there. It means, in other words, material energy won't show you Krishna. Right? You might be able to understand some aspect of Brahman or Paramatma, but you won't get the Bhagavan. So that means that has to come through the Parampara, and that then you can only, then with that touch, then you can see it that way. So if they don't add it, it's not there. It's not automatic. It's like chanting Hare Krishna, whether you're attentive or not, or whether you know what it is or not, it's still spiritual. This is, you connect it, it is. You don't connect it, it's not. It's like your toaster. You plug it in, it's connected. You don't plug it in, it's not. So even though you can do all the functions, right? You don't plug it in, you can still push the thing up and down, you can turn the knobs and this and that and all that. You won't get there. Huh? It doesn't?
No.
You don't have the button to make it come up?
The one that you push down, it doesn't work.
Oh, that's because people nowadays leave their newspaper in there or something like that. Or the kids stick stuff in there.
No, that's very surprising.
But I mean, at least our one, you could move it. You could, if it didn't go back up, you could push it down, and then there's a button you can push it and go up. But otherwise, I think the earlier ones, it's just you push it a little harder and it would come up. It had a little bit of lock, but if you push it, it would lock up. A catch, yeah, something. So, it means, in other words, you can play around with it. You can stick knives in there and, you know, play with it, turn it upside down, you know, like that. Take it out, you know, on the smooth floor, and then put it on the floor, the kid can sit on it, and then the other kid can grab the electric cord and pull. You know, you can do so many, you can swing it around, you know. It means there's a lot of stuff you can do with your toaster. But until it's plugged in and you use it according to the definition of the Shastra, in this case the manual, then it doesn't work. You get no benefit. So that's what's happening, is they're not making that connection. It's not like direct devotion service. It's apara, it's secondary, and unless you connect it, it's not connected. It may be pious, but, you know, I mean, there's already 1.4 billion people who are pious doing that. Do we need one more? You know? So I remember one devotee went to the minister in Delhi. He says, you know, he asked him, why is it so hard for, you know, us, you know, Westerners to get a, you know, Indian passport? He says, oh, you want to know? I'll tell you. He said, come. And he you know, okay. He took him over the window. It's old building, you know, those huge windows and that. And it's on the, you know, main road. And he points down the street. He says, see all those people there? So, and there was tons of people that said, yeah. He said, yeah, no, there's a lot of people. He says, we don't need anymore. We got enough. You know, practical.
Yeah.
That's straightforward. You know, so it's like, okay. You know, so we don't need anymore. You know, according to the, you know, Indian government, we don't need more Hindus. There's plenty of them. So it's like, you know, Prabhupada went to preach pure devotion. So if at best they're going to be coming, it's so dangerous. You know? It means they'll go to the heavenly planets, and then because Krishna in the Gita is also something to note, because you hear, but it's just with time you start to catch that in the verse you have what's it? It means taking birth of the pious. That means the rich person, the Brahmins, you know, the religious people. Suchinam.
Suchinam.
Yeah. But then that's together. Yeah, but then in the second part of the verse it mentions about the yogis. Yeah, so the yogis are the devotees. So those who are born in the family of devotees, they're in that third one. And the others, you get born there. So I mean, how many rich people or wealth people or this or that, they're not interested in devotional service at all. You know, so that's the Naradama. So it's not an ideal place. That it's better than others because you have the opportunity, but how many take it? I mean, think about it. How many people in our movement are from wealthy backgrounds? You know, traditional wealthy backgrounds. There are a few, but not so much. India more, but in the West, not so many. So, and it's not that they're not wealthy people, you know. I mean, so you have Forbes 500, just, you know, that, at least that means, you know, maybe we have one or two of them. You know, what about the other 440, you know, how do you say, 98, you know? So it's like, so it's not ideal, you know. And the religious people, it's not, if you're not interested in the Vedic, you know, things, maybe there you'd be in the Vedic, you know, smartos, if you're that pious or otherwise, who knows? So it's not, it's too risky. It's just, you don't want to take that risk. Because you don't know where you end up. And because they follow all this opera vidya also on the lower planets. You know? I mean, you're not going to get fabulous association there unless you end up with Dhruva. I mean, with Vlad Maharaj. You know? But even you see his grandson is there fighting with Krishna. You know? Manasura was Vlad Maharaj's grandson. You know, so he's a pure devotee, his son's a pure devotee, and then the grandson is, you know, is not so pure devotee. You know, so like that, one has to be careful. You know, you can do that, but that's why these points are there. But it's always taken with this this modern thing of, you know, means you want to relativize everything, so that, I mean, the Ionians have added that in, and then you get rid of authority. So if you got rid of authority and it's relative, means whatever I feel and think is reality. And so then, you know, and everybody has their own opinion, but we're all equal and all this, and you can't, you know, and like before, you can't tell anybody anything, and so therefore, you know, just everybody smiles and moves on. But then you know, that's where the Shastric aphorism about going to hell in a bucket and enjoying the ride, you know, so that's where it comes from. You know, so they're warnings that you can take these things and miss. So that's why. That's the whole point of this, is that you see it's always being seen in the context of devotional service. And if that's caught and all the elements, the fundaments of the upper avidya are seen in that context, then if you have a use for it in that, then you would be able to use it in Krishna service. And if not, then why because otherwise then okay. Uddariki, Srila Prabhupada. Whatever form of material existence one is in, one is invariably ignorant of his real situation. In other words, existence in the material world is due to the multiple reactions to our sinful lives. Ignorance, mritya jnana, is the cause of sinful life, dosha, and sinful life is the cause of one's dragging on in material existence, janma and prabhuti. So according to this, then I guess if you say that the body is ignorance, so if the body becomes hungry, then that becomes the basis of ignorance, and therefore then the dosha is produced.
No.
Okay. Okay. On that, and sinful life is the cause of what's dragging on material existence, janma and prabhupada.
Ignorance of self. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. The human form of life is the only loophole by which one may get out of this entanglement. The Vedas therefore give us a chance for escape by pointing out the paths of religion, economic comfort, regulated sense gratification, and at last the means to get out of miserable condition, dukkha, entirely. Bhagavad Gita 4:31, per point. Right, so you see, he's made it, but it's only if you understand it in the context of Krishna. Human form of life is meant for that, and so therefore then if we're supposed to get out, what is getting out? Because moksha on its own only temporarily gets you out. You know, but if you want a permanent solution, then only bhakti will do that. So if it's used in the context of bhakti, then it has a value. Is that...
Yeah.
Riti. Thus, through the process of gaining true knowledge, right? So that's the thing, true knowledge, not just knowledge. One can remove mitya jnana, ignorance, and thereby attain liberation or freedom from material existence. Riti. Second riti.
This is just the conclusion.
Okay. Yes. The first two verses stated the udesha, naming of the object, of the work. From the next sutra up to the end of this chapter, lakshana, defining the unique characteristics that each of the 16 padarthas specify. All we need an is or something. Mm-hmm. The next sutra mentions the characteristic features of pramana, which is the first padartha, right? So these first two is we've done pramana and prameya. And then you know how it works in all the different elements. But then one may say, as we saw before, he was pointing out, someone might say is, oh, but these are all included, why do we have to have them separate? So then he went through and showed how each one has its unique identity. It's all part of the bigger picture, you can't separate it, but it's still, you know, the one is, it's pramana, it's prameya. It's two different things, but you can say it's all based on shastra. You have the shastra, and then what's proven by the shastra. So in that way, you could say it's just one. You know? You just keep going until you have to get out of a microscope to look at it. So the here he's pointed out, so now he's going to get into defining all of them, and breaking them down so you know the parts that are working within them. Yes.
So Maharaj, the padarthas are what's out there, is the reality, different.
It's 16 objects of knowledge.
Yes.
It's
your tools. You know, it'd just be like saying, with the proper recipe and proper utensils, then you can cook. You know. And then within you know the recipe and this and that, but within the utensils, then you need a knife, you need a cutting board, you need a grater, you need a pan, you need a spoon. They say someone to say no, but you've already said kitchen utensils. Why do we have to separately mention them? Because if you don't separately mention them, you won't actually understand how to use them in cooking.
So these are tools for proper reasoning, so that you can gain liberation.
Yes. Is you can understand the shastra, and the effect of shastra is you remove ignorance, that will get you out of the material existence. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur's point, that's not enough. It's not enough to get you into the spiritual world. You have to apply it therefore on bhakti. And so even applying it in devotional service, we only look at the logical point, the mechanics, and discuss that, then we may miss the point also. Like sometimes you see somebody gets newly into something and they get right into breaking down the word and this and that, and you completely lose what the topic's about. That meant that they got to that point of there's some knowledge, but they missed out on what it's actually for. You know, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur's warning against that. Don't stop there. Just because you, by logic, get out of it, you can only get into the spiritual world by knowing Krishna. So that's real knowledge. That's real destruction of ignorance. The ignorance is actually not knowing Krishna. We're thinking ignorance is identifying the material world. Yes, but the point is it comes up because we don't identify as servant of Krishna. If we identified as servant of Krishna, there wouldn't be identity with the material world. So if you identify as servant of Krishna, automatically moksha is there. So anyone identifies as servant of Krishna, they're already liberated. You know, how well situated they are in that liberation, that then is by practice and maturity. But the point is there.
So therefore in our study guides we always have to bring.
Always. So we're looking for those points that do connect it. Those are the essential ones. Because when we start off like this, because we did it before, it never worked out. We're working with Ayurveda now. You just take kind of the main details. The principal details, but that's not enough. You have to look for this. So when we were doing the Natya Shastra, that's what we saw is where are those connections, because we were doing along with Rupa Goswami. Then you start to see how he's doing. Then we understood this. It was still a bit of inductive, you know. you have to take it. No, you have to completely switch it. It's a deductive approach to this because we're making it accessible for the devotees. So he's going to use the proper, you know, examples and everything. So, you know, drishtanta will be there. But the point is that it's not about learning nyaya as, you know, you would say you know the topic that you can, but it's enough that if you apply yourself, you could use it in devotional service and understand that how Prabhupada's using it. Because if we were going to do a course on logic where you get a degree in logic, then you just have to study the purports of Prabhupada and the acharyas and all that. Then you can see how logic is working, what's the point being made, how the Upanishads are going through and doing that, how the Rupa Sutras. You just see all the examples that are done there. But yesterday it came up and said they were having the rhetoric, you know, it's an ISKCON course, like that. But then in that, then the what do you call that? Not the word. The technical word is orchestrator. But they call them facilitators. Because they orchestrate. They want it to go the way they want it to go. But you don't want it to sound like that. In other words, the teacher's got to teach in a certain way. But they don't want to do that. They want to pull it back to kind of like, you know, bureaucratic. You don't have any responsibility. And so then they try to orchestrate what's going on. But that'll sound bad. So you say facilitator. But facilitate what? You know.
Facilities, I guess.
Hmm? Yeah. Got them there, got them a ticket, you know, they got a place to stay. Yeah, so. So.
I heard those words are also not used now. Mentor and facilitator is also like.
Oh, because it has too much authority.
What are they using?
I heard I heard some other word recently.
Yeah, they just get softer until it has to get to the point where you can make no distinction. You know?
In Russian, there is no word facilitator. So they just took English and made it into Russian term.
Oh, okay.
Which is completely weird.
But it's traditional. I mean, it's those people who didn't appreciate functioning within the specific cultural environment and standard that was going on in your, you know, at least the, you know, the European, you know, part of Russia, then those who didn't like because they didn't appreciate, so then Stalin would facilitate them going to another place, an alternative, you know, realm in which they didn't have to follow all those norms that were there, you know, and where they went to, it had its own different kind of thing. So yeah, he was a great facilitator. Yeah. The great facilitator.
Need a degree, you got.
Yes, he says the great facilitator.
He facilitated almost 40 million people.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why we say the great facilitator. I mean, who else can say that they have that kind of greatness to them facilitating? I mean, maybe Chiang Kai-shek, or I think Mao Zedong. He was quite
Mao was good also.
I think Chiang Kai-shek kind of, they left. He was cool. But I think with Mao, they don't, you know, you're leaving. Yeah.
So rhetoric and facilitate. That.
Yeah. So then the point was made there is that there's no absolute. Everything's relative in these discussions. So right, they took it out of any kind of spiritual topic and coming to any kind of vada and coming to actually the point of it. And so rhetoric simply is the tools used by someone on jalpa. Or vitanda. It vada is just like removed from the table, and so, you know, so like that, and you can't. There's no etiquette, you know, which is a standard thing because that came from the, you know, previous, you know, no authority like that. So to kick out authority, and kick out absolute. So then you're just left with speculation, you know, pleasant speculation.
And whoever is better than that,
yeah,
sophistry.
Yes. I mean, so That's 3,000 years old. And they're the ones that got rid of, that was the first thing, they got rid of Socrates because of that absolute aspect, and that he was an authority. Well, they want to be the authority. Yes. Oh, sophists, okay. What was that? Could you hear the word? Like from Aristotle. They happened to be around at the time. Yeah, because the Greeks, you know, when they say that the, you know, the fathers of the Western civilization, it was all going on then. There's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that's
even the modern terminology is based on Greek.
Yeah.
If you look into in terms of education, philosophy, culture, it's like 80%.
Some facilitation is coming from Greeks. They are responsible for all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Ionians, the relativeness, that relativity, that's also Greeks. That was when Greeks extended into Turkey. And then I think... Sorry?
Before Socrates.
Before, okay. Yeah. Oh, so after Socrates, they were just in the Greek, I mean, in what's now Greece. Because it was on both sides of the Aegean before. But I guess that side turned into Turkey.
Yeah.
And so then all the problems in this have all come up from there, and I think Socrates was a bit worried about it, but then because he wasn't, you know, up to date and modern and progressive, you know, then they got rid of it. So it's the same old thing that Simone's mentioned. Yeah. So these camps have always been. So we have to be very, very careful about this, because that's why the Acharya said it has to be done. You have to start from the Shastra. Then you apply it, and then you bring it until the point you can see it. And until you can see it, then when you can see it, then you know it's worked. You know, it's just like, you know, Shastra says you live this lifestyle, you'll be freed from material anxiety. So when you start to see you're becoming free, then you know you're doing it right. So that's the point, is Shastra can be seen. That's the Shastra Chakshus. You can see, at least knowledge-wise, through the Shastra, why it's there. And Vigyan means you can actually see it applied. Because that, then, that Vigyan, that will, that's what's very helpful for others. You know, so like in the social system, then your Vanaprasthas, they have that experience. They have the Vigyan. So they can help others in the culture appreciate how to actually apply it. Otherwise, you know, so many years get wasted. You know, that's why you can see is that in the Vedic culture, because it was so nicely done, you'd have the individuals being able to get married much younger and have mature family life. You know, they didn't have, like Abhimanyu, 16. You know, it's already, you know, his kid's there. And he's already a Maharati, and, you know, in the military, you say that's a very big personality.
He didn't have his childhood.
He did. It just starts. It means, in other words, you get your childhood until you're five. While here now, it's kids, parents put you in daycare. So then, and then they're saying, "Oh, you don't get your childhood." It says, "Yeah, because you weren't there. That's why there's no childhood." You know, I think the Chinese put it started. I mean, the Japanese, I think, a year and a half years old, they have schools for training kids from one and a half.
You see,
on
Mumbai, they
right?
From 2 years old.
Where?
Mumbai.
Okay. Yeah. Catching up.
You're catching up. Everywhere.
You do these things, but then, you know, then they come up with things, oh, no, childhood. It's kind of, when does childhood end? So because, yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, it says,
in our tradition, it says, until you get the degree of engineer or lawyer, until then you're a child. That's the Jewish one.
But no, what about doctor?
Yeah.
Doctor also.
Okay, that goes with lawyer. Lawyer and doctor, and then the modern one's engineer.
Previously was engineer, and now lawyer and doctor. doctors were not that popular before.
Okay, because on the American side, it was always doctor and lawyer.
No, but he has engineering background.
Okay, they figured out you get more money.
Now it's high tech.
Less work. You just sit at your chair and get the money, while the other guy
to
really work
degree.
Hard.
Until you get that degree, you can see your child. I mean, you have to receive your mom.
Okay, okay. Once you have the degree, but then don't you have to have a job and be married also?
As much as the same goes.
Okay. Well, not scaring anybody. Get them to get up to that point. Okay. Okay, because otherwise, yeah, because that part is just a given. You're always going to be, but you get that idea, because otherwise they wouldn't go out, get the thing, and then otherwise they'd just stay, get married, stay at home, and then be a burden. So then they go out and get it. Okay. Yeah, so these kind of things are always there, but we're thinking, oh, we're up to date, we're keeping up to date with the latest thing. No, you're not. You're just doing what they did thousands of years ago, and they've always done it. It's the same old stuff. That's the fun part. It's not, you know, like you say, in Greek they have terms for all this. You know, most of the time, especially philosophy, you go back to a Greek word. Yeah. You know, like that. But you know, in all these fields they have. So. Yeah. Well. So the ideas are pointed out so that it will, you know, how you can use it. And so we're showing up, the point is you can appreciate it and use it on a point where you understand the principle. Because if you understand the principle, then anybody who can understand the principle can use it that much. And it's actually the essential point of it. So if you have that, you actually have nyaya. Now, if you can add detail to that, you can understand the finer points and breaking down, you know, the terminologies, you can utilize that, then that's even better. But if doing that you lose that essential point, then like you said before, Shrami and Kavala, it's a waste of time. But if you can do that, just means you're more capable. It's your nature, you can do that. So then that's the does that make sense? So that's the idea of the approach of these courses. Is that you can see how it works and that. And if you know this, you can actually talk to people in the field and explain it. Sutra 113, perception, inference, comparison, and verbal testimony. These are the means of correct knowledge, pramanas. Riti, settling the question of pramana is complicated by the fact that among India's philosophical schools there exist a total of 10 pramanas, or proof. Each philosophical school recognizes a certain combination of these as valid. It means there's 10 total, no one recognizes all 10.
Actually, the Pauranikas are supposed to...
Oh, you use all 10. Okay. Otherwise, they take their combination. You know, means all 10 are there, and you'll use all 10, but you don't need to categorize them as 10. You put them together. Yeah, because it's you know, how fine it is. You know, you don't have to divide. It means you have the thing, but it's like you have 10 knives. You know, they're knives. You know, and if in this situation you use this and you use that stuff, if you use that, so you know the big one you use for this, the small one you use for that. The dull one is what you give for guests, you know, and stuff like that. You know, people come to help you. That means when someone else wants to use your kitchen, you give them the dull one. Yeah, you know, like that. So then don't those kind of things. You know, hide your good knives away. Yeah. Fine knives.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.